This is Food Talk for Health, because you really are what you eat. Here is your host, Tonia King.
Joining me today is Andre Loy, president of the International Federation of Organic Agricultural Movements. There's a mouthful. How are you today, Andre?
I'm wonderful. And how are you, Tonia?
I'm fine. We're talking about your new book called The Myths of Safe Pesticides. And just the word pesticides is such a hot button issue that I can't wait to get into detail with you. So tell me why you decided to do the book.
One of the main reasons is that I've actually been an organic farmer for 40 years. I come from a farming family, and I was the one who always gets sick around pesticides. And as a result, I naturally became an organic farmer. But as the years went by, and in various communities where I lived, we saw the amount of cancers, particularly breast cancers, other degenerative diseases, particularly in children with autism and other behavioral problems. You start to ask questions, and that's when I started researching this book.
Is this your first book, Andre?
Yes, it is. I've written chapters in books. I've written lots of articles, but this is the first time I've ever written a book. Long overdue. At 60 years old, I should have done it years ago.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you have a passion for the topic.
I do, and it has been many years of work. In fact, I wrote the first drafts of this 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I've been very careful in the research in terms of making sure that everything I say is based on solid science. Because this is a very important topic.
You know, the thing is that what is frightening is that all of these chemicals have been in use for so many years in the farming industry.
You're right. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write it, because you know, the first line of people who are getting ill are farmers and their communities who are being exposed. But then the other group of people who are getting ill are the consumers, the people who buy this produce. So it is a very important topic that needs to be properly considered and looked at.
You know, it's what I find interesting is you have the farmers on one side who sometimes say that it is so expensive to be certified organic that they are forced to use pesticides to prevent insects from destroying crops. And then you have the people on the other side, the consumers, who say, well, it's too expensive to always buy organic. So, you know, where is the line drawn?
That is a very good question, Tonia, and there's no one simple answer. Firstly, if we start with the farming and the production. We now have very good scientific research where organic production can start getting equal to higher yields. The whole issue of organic agriculture has been almost completely ignored by the scientific and research community. And all the funds have gone into growing with pesticides and synthetic fertilizers. Now that we're starting to use the ecological and other sciences, and starting to put that into farming, we're getting new systems where we can get very high yields at much lower production costs. And that is where we need to put our resources for funding, and we also need to now have training and education for farmers so that they can use these new techniques. That's the farming side of it. Now, whether they want to be certified or not, that's a marketing decision, but they can still grow organically, mm-hmm. get high yields, and have lower production costs. So that makes their farms more viable. And if that happens for consumers, then organic produce starts to become the premium becomes less. What we find in other countries, when you start getting organic up to around 10, 15, 20% of the produce in the stores and shops, supermarkets, the premium is a lot less as a percentage. Part of the problem why we have such high premiums is the lack of economies of scale.
Isn't that interesting?
Can I say there's one other side of that too? Organic is a much better product. There will always be a premium for it. And the other reason why we need a premium is because the price that people are paying for food that's going back to farmers is, in many cases, below the cost of production. It's why we're losing farmers everywhere. They're just not viable. On the other hand, with organic growing, we're making sure that premium goes back to farmers. We are growing farmers. We are increasing farmers. We're keeping farmers in their rural communities and keeping them viable, whereas in conventional agriculture, the opposite is happening. And so that's one of the reasons why we need a premium. It's about fairness to farmers and keeping viable rural communities.
Well, now, you're involved from an international perspective. Do you find certain countries easier to adapt this approach than others?
Not really. It's very interesting. It doesn't matter where we are, you know, whether so we're up in, you know, the northern parts of Ontario or in Canada or in Guatemala or in Brazil or in India or Thailand or Bhutan or Zambia in Africa. There are organic systems that work very well in every one of these climates. The right selection of crops, the right way of looking at soils, we can get good high yields.
Well, I'm a very big supporter of organic produce as much as I can, and I'm very much into supporting my local farmers. And some of those local farmers, again, aren't, quote, certified organic, but, you know, I know what they're growing and how it's grown, and it makes me feel good to eat it. But what bothered me, that one of the things I read in your book was that, I guess, on big-scale farming operations, none of these pesticides are ever tested, or maybe one of the elements in the combination of pesticides are tested, whereas you don't know if the other ones have any effect. Tell me about that.
That is one of the most important issues. All they test for is what they call the active ingredient in the pure form of that. But the actual product that is sold as a pesticide is a combination of a whole range of chemicals. The others aren't tested, and the whole product isn't tested. And a lot of scientists are saying this is not scientific. This is based on data-free assumptions. And where we have the testing now, we're finding that many of these products are, you know, 6, 7, up to 1,000 times more toxic than the actual active ingredient, the one that is tested. And that's a big problem. For instance, in the USA, there's about 1,400 products that are sold like that don't have the complete testing. And that is a massive concern when we think we have multiple residues of chemicals on these foods and we have no testing for their combinations.
And, you know, without the public being educated, you know, people just don't know about it.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book. The right to know is a very important part of all democracies. Consumers have a right to know what is on their food and the science behind it in terms of its safety, so that they can make decisions, and where they're not happy about it, they can actually put pressure on governments to change things and to do things correctly.
Absolutely. That leads me into GMOs. You know, the whole genetically modified organism thing, whereas before it was never, you didn't have to have it on a label. And now it's nice to see things on labels. And again, it does go back to the whole government regulation, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. And this is what, as you know, you've got campaigns in the USA in terms of the right to know, and you know, they're being fought fairly strongly. But in the end, I think it is very important. Consumers have the right to know and have the right to make an informed choice. And there shouldn't be things trying to hide this information from consumers. If the GMO companies are so proud of their products, you know, they would label them as GMOs. But trying to hide it makes people ask questions. In the organic sector, we're very proud of our products, and that's why we like labels on it.
Exactly.
So consumers can have make an informed choice.
Well, you know, the whole thing with pesticides goes from the food world to the household product world. But back to the food world, you know about the Dirty Dozen, right? I think a lot of there's a lot of people that really don't know about the Dirty Dozen. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes. For consumers, the Dirty Dozen are probably some of the worst, some of the most residual, and ones that probably should have been banned about the time that Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring in 1962. And you know, they're still being used around most of the planet. You know, in the States here, in North America, you've been very good about removing them out of production. But in places like India and Bangladesh and other places, you'll still find them in the food supply and where food is being imported.
But I think
that's an issue.
Yeah, and like I know, for example, apples. Apples are on the Dirty Dozen, and yet... For me, it's like, well, I will peel my apple before I eat it, because that's one way to maybe eliminate some of the residue of pesticides, right?
Some of it, but a lot of them are what we call systemic, which means it actually gets absorbed through the plant into the flesh.
Isn't that awful? Wow.
Yeah, so the whole purpose is if they get bitten by a bug and it lays an egg in there, the poisons can't kill the egg. It's got to be enough poison so when the egg hatches, the grub will be poisoned.
Wow.
And that's an issue, you know, because if a week later there's still enough poison to kill a grub inside the fruit, what's it doing to our children?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is just a scary thought. And, you know, now transforming over into, like, household products. For years, people have used so many things that were kept under the kitchen sink. It would just smell awful. You'd walk into the house, and you had that chemical smell instantly. It's nice to see now there's been a little bit of a change towards that, and I think some of these companies are trying to profit over that.
Yeah, companies have to profit. If they're profiting over changing from things that are toxic and causing ill health over to things that will help the environment and help people, well, I'm quite happy that they make a profit.
Yeah, no, me too, because it's really sad.
Yeah, so I'm really pleased to see that you've got some companies now taking up social responsibility as a very important driver in terms of how they approach things.
You know, years ago, we never heard of BPA. You never saw or heard anything about that. Now you can get water bottles with BPA-free. Tell me about BPA and how that has damaged us.
Particularly children. For people to understand, BPA is a class of chemicals, and we're learning more about them, that we call endocrine disruptors. How these work, the endocrine system is your hormone system, and it works in very small amounts, down to parts per billion or even parts per trillion. And for people to understand what a part per trillion is, if you have three Olympic-sized swimming pools, and you put one drop in that, that's a part per trillion. And what they're finding is with some chemicals, when they're in parts per million, that they seem to be relatively safe. But when you take it down to these very small dilutions, they actually act like hormones, and they bind with the hormone receptors. But because they're not the hormone, they send a faulty signal. And where this is very important is when the fetus, the unborn, are developing, and also young children are still developing, and they need these hormone signals to develop properly. In other words, form limbs, to form hormone systems, nervous systems, to form the brain, the eyes, all the different parts of the human body. And these are called programming events. They happen once in your lifetime and program you for the rest of your life. Now, if they're interrupted, that process is interrupted, these body parts or body systems don't form properly. And we're now seeing, for instance, obesity, we can trace back to this, because what is happening, it's not just people eating a lot more junk food, it's actually changing their metabolism and way glucose is metabolized. Instead of being used for energy, it's going straight into building body fat. We're seeing behavioral problems, you know, ADHD, those sorts of, you know, anger management, all these other problems that we're seeing with children are based on what is happening with these endocrine disruptors. And there's many of them, and unfortunately a lot of them, we haven't even tested properly. Many of the pesticides, I should say, that are finding now can act as endocrine disruptors in the smallest amount in our food.
Andre, it's important that people like you are traveling the world to, you know, bring it, I think, more to top of mind. And the book that we are talking about is The Myths of Safe Pesticides. Andre, do you have a website we could go to?
Yes, look, it's available from the Acres USA website, www.acresusa.com.
Thank you so much for your time today, Andre. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tonya. I've really enjoyed it.
I'm Tonya King, and you're listening to Food Talk for Health on Radio Daddy-O.